Chapter 9. On the other hand, this creates eternal murmurs, heartburnings and regret, both in the natives and the transplanted inhabitants. The first have shown their uneasiness by frequent insurrections and rebellions, for nature prompts the meanest animal to struggle for liberty, and these struggles have often been attended with great cruelty, ravages, death, massacres, and ruin both of families and the country itself. As to the transplanted inhabitants, they run into clandestine trade, into corresponding with their master's enemies, victualling their navies, colonies and the like, receiving and importing their goods in spite of all the orders and directions to the contrary. These are the effects of divisions and feuds on that side. On the other hand, there is a kingdom entire unconquered and independent, and for the present, under the same monarch with the rest. But here their feuds are greater than with the other, and more dangerous by far because national. This kingdom joins to the north part of the first kingdom, and terrible divisions lie among the two nations. The people of these two kingdoms, are called if you please for distinction's sake, for I cannot well make you understand their hard names, Salianarians, and Nullianarians, these to the south and those to the north. The Salianarians were divided in their articles of religion. The governing party, or the established church, I shall call the Salianarian church, but the whole kingdom was full of a sort of religious people called Crowleans, who like our dissenters in England profess divers subdivided opinions by themselves, and could not, or would not, let it go which way it will, join with the established church. On the other hand, the established church in the northern kingdom was all Crowleans, but full of Salianarians in opinions, who were dissenters there, as the Crowleans were dissenters in the south, and this unhappy mixture occasioned endless feuds, divisions, subdivisions and animosities without number, of which hereafter. The northern men are bold, terrible, numerous and brave, to the last degree, but poor, and by the encroachments of their neighbors, growing poorer every day. The southern are equally brave, more numerous and terrible, but wealthy and care not for wars, had rather stay at home and quarrel with one another, than go abroad to fight, making good an old maxim, too poor to agree, and yet too rich to fight. Between these the feud is great, and every day growing greater, and those people who pretend to have been in the cogitator or thinking engine tell us, all the lines of consequences in that affair point at a fatal period between the kingdoms. The complaints also are great, and backed with fiery arguments on both sides. The northern men say, the Salianarians have dealt unjustly and unkindly by them in several articles. But the southern men reply with a most powerful argument, viz. They are poor, and therefore ought to be oppressed, suppressed, or anything. But the main debate is like to lie upon the article of choosing a king, both the nations being under one government at present, but the settlement ending in the reigning line. The northern men refuse to join in government again, unless they have a rectification of some conditions in which, they say, they have the worst of it. In this case, even the southern men themselves say, they believe the Nullianarians have been in the chair of reflection, the thinking engine, and that having screwed their understandings into a direct position to that matter before them, they have made a right judgment of their own affairs, and with all their poverty stand on the best foot as to right. But as the matter of this northern quarrel comes under a second head, and is more properly the subject of a second voyage to the moon, the reader may have it more at large considered in another class, and some farther enlightenings in that affair than perhaps can be reasonably expected of me here. But of all the feuds and wrangles that ever poor nation was embroiled in, of all the quarrels, the factions and parties that ever the people of any nation thought worth, while to fall out for, none were ever in reality so light, in effect so heavy, in appearance so great, in substance so small, in name so terrible, in nature so trifling, as those for which this southern country was altogether by the ears among themselves. And this was one reason, why I so earnestly inquired of my Linnaean philosopher, whether he had an estate in that country or no. But having told him the cause of that inquiry, he replied, there was one thing in the nature of his countrymen which secured them from the ruin which usually attended divided nations, viz., that if any foreign nation thinking to take the advantage of their intestine divisions fell upon them in the highest of all their feuds, they'd lay aside their parties and quarrels and presently fall in together, to beat out the common enemy, and then no sooner had they obtained peace abroad, by their conduct and bravery, but they would fall to cutting one another's throats again at home as naturally as if it had been their proper calling, and that for trifles too, mere trifles. Very well, said I to my learned self, pretty like my own country still, that whatever peace they have abroad, are sure to have none at home. To come at the historical account of these Linnaean dissensions, it will be absolutely necessary to enter a little into the story of the plus, at least as far as relates to the present constitution, both of the people, the government, and the subject of their present quarrels. And first we are to understand, that there has for some ages been carried on in these countries, a private feud or quarrel among the people, about a thing called by them a bajilla, with us very vulgarly called religion. This difference, as in its original it was not great, nor indeed upon points accounted among themselves essential, so it had never been a difference of any height, if there had not always been some one thing, or other, happening in the state which made the court politicians think it necessary to keep the people busy and embroiled, to prevent their more narrow inspection into depredations and encroachments on their liberties, which was always making on them by the court. 'Tis not denied, but there might be a native want of charity in the inhabitant, adapting them to feud, and particularly qualifying them to be always piquing one another, and some of their own nation, who by the help of the famous perspectives before mentioned, pretend to have seen farther into the insights of nature and constitution than other people, tell us the cross lines of nature which appear in the make of those particular people, signify a direct negative, as to the article of charity and good neighborhood. 'Twas particularly unhappy to this wrangling people, that reasons of state should always fall in, to make that uncharitableness and continual quarreling humor necessary to carry on the public affairs of the nation, and may pass for a certain proof, that the state was under some diseases and convulsions, which, like a body, that digests nothing so well as what is hurtful to its constitution, makes use of those things for its support, which are in their very nature, fatal to its being, and must at last tend to its destruction. But as this however inclined them to be continually snarling at one another, so as in all quarrels it generally appears one side must go down. The prevailing party therefore always kept the power in their hands, and as the under were always subject to the lash they soon took care to hook their quarrel into the affairs of state, and so join religious differences and civil differences together. These things had long embroiled the nation, and frequently involved them in bitter enmities, feuds, and quarrels, and once in a tedious, ruinous, and bloody war in their own bowels, in which, contrary to all expectation, this lesser party prevailed. And since the allegoric relation may bear great similitude with our European affairs on this side the moon, I shall for the ease of expression, and the better understanding of the reader, frequently call them by the same names our unhappy parties are called by in England, as Solinarian churchmen, and Crowleyan dissenters, at the same time desiring my reader to observe, that he is always to remember who it is we are talking of, and that he is by no means, to understand me of any person, party, people, nation, or plus on this side the moon, any expression, circumstance, similitude, or appearance to the contrary in any wise notwithstanding. This premised, I am to tell the reader that the last civil war in this lunar country ended in the victors confounding their own conquests by their intestine broils, they being, as is already noted, a most eternally quarreling nation. Upon this new breach, they that first began the war, turned it about, and pleading that they took up arms to regulate the government, not to overthrow it, fell in with the family of their kings, who had been banished, and one of them destroyed, and restored the crown to the family, and the nation to the crown, just for all the world as the Presbyterians in England did, in the case of King Charles II. The party that was thus restored, accepted the return the others made to their duty, and their assistance in restoring the family of their monarch, but abated not a tittle of the old rancor against them as a party which they entertained at their first taking arms, not allowing the return they had made to be any atonement at all for the crimes they had been guilty of before. 'Tis true they passed an act or grant of general pardon, and oblivion, as in all such cases is usual, and as without which the other would never ha come in, or have joined powers, to form the restoration they were bringing to pass, but the old feud of religion continued with this addition, that the dissenters were rebels, murderers, king-killers, enemies to monarchy and civil government, lovers of confusion, popular, anarchical governments, and movers of sedition, that this was in their very nature and principles, and the like. In this condition, and under these mortifications, this party of people lived just an Egyptian servitude, viz. Of 40 years, in which time they were frequently vexed with persecution, harassed, plundered, fined, imprisoned, and very hardly treated, insomuch that they pretend to be able to give an account of vast sums of their country money, levied upon them on these occasions, amounting, as I take it, to 2 millions of lunations, a coin they keep their accounts by there, and much about the value of our pound sterling. Besides this, they were hooked into a great many sham plots, and sworn out of their lives and estates in such a manner, that in the very next reign the government was so sensible of their hard treatment, that they reversed several sentences by the same authority that had executed them, a most undeniable proof they were ashamed of what had been done. At last, the prince who was restored as above said, died, and his brother mounted the throne. And now began a third scene of affairs, for this prince was neither churchman, nor dissenter, but of a different religion from them all, known in that country by the name of Abragratzianism, and this religion of his had this one absolutely necessary consequence in it, that a man could not be sincerely and heartily of this, but he must be an implacable hater of both the other. As this is laid down as a previous supposition, we are with the same reason to imagine this prince to be entirely bent upon the suppression and destruction of both the other, if not absolutely, as to life and estate, yet entirely as to religion. To bring this the more readily to pass, like a true politician, had his methods and particulars been equally politic with his generals, he began at the right end, viz. To make the breach between the Solinarian Church and the Crowleian dissenters as wide as possible, and to do this, it was resolved to shift sides, and as the crown had always took part with the Church, crushed, humbled, persecuted, and by all means possible mortified the dissenters, as is noted in the reign of his predecessor. This prince resolved to caress, cherish, and encourage the Crowleians by all possible arts and outward endearments, not so much that they purposed them any real favor, for the destruction of both was equally determined, nor so much that they expected to draw them over to Abragratzianism, but two reasons may be supposed to give rise to this project. 1. The Linarian Church party had all along preached up for a part of their religion, that absolute undisputed obedience, was due from every subject to their prince without any reserve, reluctance or repining, that as to resistance, it was fatal to body, soul, religion, justice, and government. And so the doctrine was repugnant to nature, and to the very supreme command itself, yet he that resisted, received to himself damnation, just for all the world like our doctrine of passive obedience. Now though these Salianarian churchmen did not absolutely believe all they set themselves to be true, yet they found it necessary to push these things to the uttermost extremities, because they might the better fix upon the Crowleyan dissenters the charge of professing less loyal principles than they. For as to the Crowleyans, they professed openly they would pay obedience to the prince, as far as the laws directed, but no farther. These things were run up to strange heights, and the people were always falling out about what they would do, or would not do, if things were so or so, as they were not, and were never likely to be. And the hot men on both sides were every now and then going together by the ears about chimeras, shadows, maybes and supposes. The hot men of the Salianarian church were for knocking the Crowleyans in the head, because as they said they were rebels, their fathers were rebels, and they would certainly turn rebels again upon occasion. The Crowleyans insisted upon it, that they had nothing to do with what was done before they were born, that if they were criminal, because their fathers were so, then a great many who were now of the Salianarian church were as guilty as they. Several of the best members of that church, having been born of Crowleyan parents. In the matter of loyalty they insisted upon it, they were as loyal as the Salianarians, for that they were as loyal as nature, reason and the laws both of God and man required, and what the other talked of more, was but a mere pretense, and so it would be found, if ever their prince should have occasion, to put them to the trial, that he that pretended to go beyond the power of nature and reason, must indeed go beyond them, and they never desired to be brought into the extreme, but they were ready at any time to shew such proofs, and give such demonstrations of their loyalty, as would satisfy any reasonable prince, and for more they had nothing to say. In this posture of affairs, this new prince found his subjects, when he came to the crown, the Salianarian church caressed him, and notwithstanding his being devoted to the Abrogratian faith, they crowned him with extraordinary acclamations. They were the rather inclined to push this forward by how much they thought it would singularly mortify the Crowleyans, and all the sorts of dissenters. For they had all along declared their abhorrence of the Abrogratians to such a degree, that they publicly endeavored to have got a general concurrence of the whole nation in the public Cortes, or Diet of the kingdom, to have joined with them in excluding this very prince by name, and all other princes, that should ever embrace the Abrogratian faith. And it wanted but a very little of bringing it to pass, for almost all the great men of the nation, though Salianarians, yet that were men of temper, moderation, and foresight, were for this exclusive law. But the high priests and patriarchs of the Salianarian church prevented it, and upon pretense of this passive obedience principle, made their interest, and gave their voices for crowning, or entailing the crown and government on the head of one of the most implacable enemies both to their religion and civil right, that ever the nation saw. But they lived to repent it too late. This conquest over the Crowleyans and the moderate Salianarians, if it did not suppress them entirely, it yet gave the other part such an ascendant over them, that they made, no doubt when that prince came to the crown, they had done so much to oblige him, that he could deny them nothing, and therefore in expectation they swallowed up the whole body of the Crowleyans at once, and began to talk of nothing. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.